Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
As you may already know, not all movement practices are designed in an equal way. In the Lit Yoga Method, we help you retrain your brain and body to move better for everyday life. Through physical therapy drills, yoga, functional mobility, core stability, and flexibility, the Lit Method rewires habitual movement patterns and postural imbalances to help you feel stronger, more energized, and more balanced both on and off the mat. Our online platform, The Lit Daily, is designed for easy convenience with a robust offering of class types so you can boost your energy while getting stress relief. Improved brain wiring means you will move with more ease and efficiency because we teach you the how and why behind movement choices, not just poses for the sake of poses. All movement teachers on the platform are certified by Lit and share a common language, providing education with clear cues that give you the needed reinforcement for enhancing your movement habits. Thousands of students in over 50 countries get Lit to feel more confident, more powerful, and more alive. We offer two subscription options for all levels and bodies. The Lit Daily option consists of over 500 classes in our library, with so many categories I can't even list them, but some include short on time, injury prevention, stress reliefs, and different body parts. There's also a Tuesday and Thursday live class that's streamed on the daily, and there's always a class of the day to help you take the guesswork out of what class to do. Lit Daily members also get 50% off the monthly workshops. The Lit Prime subscription offer has everything in the daily plus over 20 weekly live Zoom classes with Lit teachers providing real-time feedback. This is wonderful for community and to get your feedback from a teacher for your own alignment. We also get free monthly workshops in the Lit Prime option. Both of these are streamable right into any TV or device through an Android, iPhone, and iPad apps. Movement changes everything, and when we move better, we feel better. So sign up for our free 2-week trial and see how getting Lit can help you feel your best today and for years to come. I'm Laura Hyman, and welcome to Redefining Movement, a Lit podcast designed to investigate all aspects of movement from my background in physical therapy and neuroscience. My mission is to help everyone find freedom through smarter movement patterns and compassion for ourselves and others, so together we can live our most uplifted lives, benefiting all beings. Welcome to another episode of Redefining Movement and our special Work Well series. In this fifth episode, I speak with Jill Miller, principal consultant at TrueWork, a learning and development solutions company focusing on group learning, executive coaching, and team retreats. Jill's work started as an executive and consultant with Fortune 100 companies, where she found her passion in executive coaching and training. Today, we thoughtfully explore the dynamic interplay between wellness and the corporate sphere, the evolving recognition of wellness programs, and the pressing need for companies to foster environments of authenticity, psychological safety, and inclusion. Self-awareness, diversity, and inclusivity are not just feel-good buzzwords, but the cornerstones for making better decisions and crafting a workplace culture that celebrates wellness in its full spectrum. Here's my conversation with Jill. Welcome, dear Jill. I'm so excited to have you on today. And I'd like to just launch right in and first ask you, where did your passion develop and then become this profession of corporate wellness?
Oh my gosh, Laura, it really started when I was quite young. I had a very strong career for a large company that I shall not name, except you might know them because they make Band-Aids. And so I was moving along, fast tracking in the corporate environment. And as I gained speed and success, I started noticing that people were really, really mean to each other, that there was a tremendous amount of backstabbing and politicking and all of these things. And because I was quite young, I was just puzzled by it. I couldn't understand why it was happening. It felt really unnecessary. And then I listened to a tape series about self-esteem and peak performance. And I thought, oh my gosh, if people just had that, they wouldn't need to take shots at each other. And so I literally left my cushy corporate job to go teach self-esteem in corporate America. But at that time, that was considered way too soft. So I had to be sheep in wolf's clothing to sneak in with the business case for doing these things. And that fell under the title of change management, which is a really broad umbrella for how do you create resilience and openness through terrific communication and interpersonal skills. And that's what I'm still doing. And that's what motivates me still. I don't like people to hurt. There's a lot of real preventable skills that we can learn that create our own wellness, but wellness for others as well.
I love that. I think it's so important to point out that in these workspaces, it's probably somewhere in our DNA to have a little bit of that like fighting mode, you know, to get climb your way to the top, you know, all these phrases we hear. But the reality is the economics of that are going to serve some people, but really, like you said, hurt a lot of others. And so I'm sure it was very important and impactful to actually get some data that supported this kind of ethos that you're teaching and wanting to model. Not only are you going to have a nicer place to work, but that there's probably going to be more success financially for the people who are looking at the bottom line. Is that true?
It's absolutely true. There's so much research on it. And in the period of time from when I left, and you couldn't even utter the words wellness of any sort other than maybe if you were lucky, your organization had a gym. The acknowledgement now is that in order to be competitive, we need to have those types of programs for our employees that allow them to do their best work because we're taking good care of them. And so there's a range of things that are available now. Some companies do it well, others just do lip service. So there's some pitfalls to that, which I can share with you as well.
Yes. I mean, this is why we're doing this series, because we all know how important it is that getting out of this binary idea of work and then home. And yes, there is a good value in having a line and some boundaries that your work life shouldn't be miserable. It shouldn't be like you leave all of your values behind just to survive. This is benefiting the companies, but it's also benefiting the individuals. So I first want to ask you, how can companies create opportunities for employees to connect outside of their immediate teams or departments? Because again, we have the workplace and then people leave work and then they're coming back to work. But how do they approach this having more of a holistic, I don't want to say family-like atmosphere, but more connectivity within different departments?
It's such a great question. And there are a range of actions that can be done. It begins though with a mindset toward valuing it and doing it for real reasons and not just, oh, we better do this to help our bottom line. So the companies that I work with that are most successful at this have a bunch of activities that allow employees to feel like they belong. So inclusion and belonging are central to our sense of well-being. We know from research that when we feel like we don't belong, we've been isolated, that the part of our brain that's activated is the same part of the brain that's activated if we're being physically abused. So creating spaces for that to happen, some of that can be done on a physical level, creating loungy spaces and you see ping pong tables and things like that. I also see places where there's ping pong tables and they have dust on them because it looks good and we use those when we hire people, but we're going to work them so hard that those things will never get used. The ones that I see being successful though take really seriously the creation of ERGs, which are employee resource groups. And those are affinity groups. So that's where if I'm a member of the LGBTQIA community, I can go and have my voice be heard and talk about things that are important to me that are really relevant to other members of that group. And we also can advocate for any changes that we believe might be essential to the organization. So there are ERGs for literally everything you can possibly imagine. I recently worked with a group that had a splinter group for Asian American women. And so again, if we look at the theme of belonging, this is a place for that to roost and to expand. CSR is corporate social responsibility. And maybe even as recently as 7 or 8 years ago, I saw companies doing this and it was a nice to do, not a need to do. In our present environment, earlier career employees will not accept a position for a company that doesn't take this seriously. And so whereas it used to be, if we have time and budget, we'll make this happen, now it's essential and there's entire departments. So corporate social responsibility are, what do we as a company care about and how do we do more than just write a check? How do we provide opportunities for employees to roll up their sleeves, go work in a soup kitchen, help pack lunches for kids in an underserved community, mentoring and developing people who maybe don't have fathers? So there's just a load of ways that companies do this. And just like with the ERGs, it's a place where you can feel like you belong because it's consistent with your own values.
And I love you keep reiterating this idea of belonging, because I dare say many people, when they think of a job, they don't think of belonging as part of that. And that might just be the way that we've been wired to think of work, is like, you must do it. Like if you ask people 40 years ago who were working two jobs, they were like, this isn't about having a good time or belonging. This is about getting a paycheck. But we need to think of our entire day, and that's part of it, is going to be at work, as a safe place, as a place where we can flourish. And we can only flourish individually when we have that basic need of feeling stable, secure, heard. This is very true with movement as well, having the feeling of stability to allow movement patterns. So in that vein, what is the ecosystem within the company in its healthy balance that can fully contribute to the company's vision, mission, and purpose? And what steps can they take to ensure that? So in other words, going back to that idea of stability, how can they infuse that stability and anchor it in their mission, in their vision, and their goals?
So the old expression of walking the talk is really what is at the core of this. So if organization has spent the time and money to create their mission statement, which most companies have done because there's good research that shows that they need to, I can't tell you the number of conference rooms I've seen where there's a beautiful plaque hung up, but if you cover it up and ask the people in the room, what does it say? They have no idea. So a vision and a mission is just a theory. What brings it to life are our actions. And the way to bring an ecosystem into balance is to ensure that the competencies that are required and what the clarity of what actions look like, what's in and what's out behaviorally, is what's going to allow us to achieve our vision and mission, and holding people accountable for that. So if you got results, yay you. But if there's a lot of scorched earth between you and those that helped you get the results, organizations who take their mission seriously will not tolerate that. And those that do, quickly people absolutely ignore any beautiful words on a plaque because they know that the company doesn't truly care.
Yeah. And I know when I was looking for Jonah's, well, both my kids, where they were going to go to school at these private schools, they all have their kind of vision statement there. And honestly, we chose the school that, where I felt like their actions came from those three words that were in their mission and vision statement. It all circled back to that. And it's a stabilizing foundation. If everything can come back to like, are we serving this? Are we answering that? Are we acting in this regard? And I'm sure that you extrapolate to a company that becomes even more important, because of all these different personalities and individuals coming in to be able to work together for this ultimate mission for the company to succeed.
It's so true. And if you even bring it down to a super granular level, what creates trust and what creates love, it's consistency. So we can lose our trust in one action that is out of integrity with what we say we care about. And we know that human beings are hardwired to perceive a threat. So if I see you having a behavior that's not consistent with what you're saying you care about, I now not only view you as somebody I need to keep an eye on, I also am going to attribute that behavior to your character. So I don't look at the action and see, that's weird. That's kind of suspicious. Instead, I believe it's called the fallacy of confirmation bias or something. But the idea is that I immediately will go to your character and believe that my impression is true. So now I not only see that that thing you did, I didn't like, it's because you're a bad person. And that becomes that toxic environment because I'm going to talk about that discrepancy to other people. And now they're going to view you through that lens too. So it's fragile. And so creating a system within an organization that allows everyone to feel safe. And so we talk about psychological safety. It's become a buzzword, but what it really means at its core is that I can be who I am. So I'm authentically who I am and I'm valued for that. I can speak my truth as long as I'm speaking it in a way that doesn't harm others. And I can be heard, even if people don't agree with me, my voice is heard and respected. And then finally, it's a safe place for me to learn. I can bring humility here, which means I make a mistake. That's a bummer. Wish that hadn't happened. But rather than me needing to hide it and cover it up and blame others, I can say, wow, I'm mid-course correcting. Here's what I've learned. I'll not make that mistake again because it really gave me knowledge I wouldn't have had otherwise. And I'm going to share that mistake with others so they don't do it too. So a culture that does those three things is one that's going to create tremendous wellness for everybody there.
Wow. And I can imagine this is great for everyone. I mean, we should be learning this in high school because if we adopt these steps to be able to be transparent but kind, feel safe in our differences and opinions and whatnot, but be able to also come to the table to unite for the greater movement towards whatever goal, that's empowering for everyone. So what are the steps? Like if you take all these different individuals in a company, what are the steps needed to have everybody feel heard, operating as individual me's, but coming together as a we? What are some of the steps that have been successful?
Well, the companies that do it well really value inclusion. And what inclusion means is that I have the right people at the table. So the right people have been invited to the table. They not only have a seat at the table, but their voice is heard and valued. And so when we have homogeneity, our decision-making is much easier and faster because we think alike, we look alike, we talk alike. When we add other groups and ways of thinking to the table, we have to work a little harder, but the decisions that are made are better decisions that stick better. So that's where those voices being heard is so important.
So it's purposefully setting up an ecosystem that is diverse, that is welcoming, recognizes that all kind of different backgrounds, cultures, mindsets, opinions are ultimately going to come together for the overall well-being of the company.
Absolutely. Yes.
I love that. So how can a positive company culture contribute to overall employee wellness? This sounds like duh, but what are the ways that you see that happens?
Well, so you know this, Laura, because of all the amazing work that you do. So our brains are hardwired to perceive a threat. And thank goodness that they've done that. Our brains do that because that older part of our brain is what allowed the species to survive. However, in our present day, we go into that threat response. So somebody can look at us with their brow furrowed and we immediately go into, oh my God, they don't like me. What are they thinking? Did I make a mistake? So we go back into that older part of our brain. And the minute we do that, we're shutting down the newer part of our brain, which is where our greater reasoning, our logic, our collaboration, our creativity come from. So there's literally this neural seesaw. So when we create a space for people to do their best work, they're coming from that higher part of their brain. So teaching them how to have conversations that allow authentic expression is something that is so important and a big part of what we teach. We know that research shows, in fact, Forbes recently published a couple months ago some research that shows the percentage of people that hold back on having a conversation. So think for a minute about somebody in your life, it might not even be at work, that you need to talk to about something and it's going to be a tough conversation and you've been avoiding it. We all have somebody, right? Like a face probably pops up when I ask the question. The research shows that about 20% of the population has been putting off a conversation anywhere from 6 months to a year. And a smaller percentage, it can be as long as 2 years. And what we put off the conversations about usually have to do with, I need to give you some feedback. So the way we go about giving feedback typically, and you hear people go, oh, they can't take constructive criticism. There is no such thing as criticism that's constructive. It's a complete fallacy. So feeding forward means I'm giving you some thoughts and ideas about, here's what I'm seeing, observable behavior. Here's what good would look like moving forward. So it hasn't happened yet. So I'm not blaming you. I'm ideating with you. I'm holding a possibility conversation of what can be based on impact. What are the results that we're looking for? How might we best get there? So those feed forward conversations are hard to do when we're hooked, when we're using that older part of our brain. And darn it, we just want to be right. Our egos are engaged. Ego kills relationships. So when I'm coming from my ego and I'm coming from that older part of our brain, that is what creates our reactive tendencies. And when I'm coming from my reactive, that's my invitation to you to come from your reactive. And that kills culture. So the way out of it is knowing a few skills and tips, which we teach all the time about how to have these forward-focused conversations that allow both parties or all parties to feel safe in exploring what can be versus having to defend what was.
And can you briefly define what is the difference between a reactiveness versus a receptiveness?
So it's such a good question. I wish everybody would ask that. So I'm in my reactive when I feel I need to defend. I feel that a part of me and my identity is at stake. It might be that I feel like I'm losing your approval. So I might go into a reactivity that looks very compliant, where I'm not going to speak my truth because you might disagree with me. And then my relationship is in peril. So I go along to get along. That would be a reactivity. Now, give me an employee that does that, that wants to please me. Give me 10 of those because they make my life easier. But if I have a leader who does that, I don't trust that person. Are they going to go to bat for me? Are they going to take care of our team? Are they going to have difficult conversations? Or are they more worried about themselves and how they're coming across? So that's an example of reactivity. Another example of reactivity is if I feel like I need to protect my brilliant ideas and my contributions. So I'm constantly going to try to position myself as the smartest one in the room. And by the way, you can't be the smartest one in the room too. So I'm going to have to shoot your ideas down in order to show that mine are better. And so somebody who's being reactive is going to resort to all those behaviors that, again, are all about ego versus saying, how else can we see this? What else is possible? What's our goal? What are we trying to achieve? What is our strategy to get there? What is your role going to be? What is my role going to be? And then one of the last, I would say, categories of reactivity has to do with who I am as a human doing. I get results and it doesn't matter how I get them because look at my achievements. So there's a lot of dead bodies in the way, but darn it, this is what I've gotten done. So I might be a perfectionist. I might be super driven and autocratic. And at the base of everything I just said is fear. It's that threat part of my brain is active and it's running me. And so there's no growth when I resort to reactivity. I can't grow because I'm not looking for possibilities or purpose. I'm looking for reinforcing my identity and my own sense of safety.
And I imagine that also that's so habitual and reflexive to be reactive. And it also comes from this hierarchy of what matters. The end result matters, like being right matters, getting a pay raise matters. How do you shift the conversation in a company culture for the individuals, but also the company, that it's really the reward is on the how we get to that stage.
Defining the what is important. These are our KPIs. This is what we need to do as a company in order to continue existing. The how is where we create engagement, and that's inclusion. And that is where we exercise our curiosity muscle, which is what is required to break down not only silos, but polarized thinking, that either or, black and white, so that we can go into yes and. And now I can be open to not how I would go about getting that end result, but if that works for you and allows you to feel engaged, I trust you. Go for it. And if we make a mistake, we'll mid-course correct. So having the ability to have a leap of faith and allow people to show up in the way that allows them to exercise their gifts enhances engagement, enhances trust, and all of that combined, everything we're talking about is at its core wellness, because I feel safe. I'm not stressed. I'm breathing in a way that allows me to feel energized. I'm able to get up and walk away from my work because I'm not terrified that somebody's going to scream at me. All of those things are what create a work well culture.
And I'm able to take a magical pause and breathe before, if you are somebody or working with somebody who has that reactive tendency, it's so reflexive. It's so, again, driven by that primitive hindbrain. That just moment of pause before you immediately go into defensive mode can be just magical, but it sometimes needs to be taught.
It does need to be taught. And I know that through the Lit platform, there's a million ways to do it. And I love so much of what's on there. Everything I've tried, I love. What I will say, and here's kind of a cool thing, given what's going on in the world as we're speaking, is that if I observe another person coming from the reactivity, as long as I don't engage my ego, and darn it, who the heck do they think they are? Look at what they're doing. As long as I don't do that, and instead I use my magic decoder ring and I go, oh, that's a reactive pattern. They must be scared. Now I can look at you with compassion, and I can be the bigger person, not the better person, but the bigger person to say, let's talk about this. Tell me what's important to you. It seems like you've got a lot of energy around this. Tell me more. So that curiosity, instead of me pushing back against the person, allows us now to have tremendous trust and collaboration, which creates wellness for all. And sometimes we need to do that with our bosses. Sometimes we need to do that with our obnoxious colleague that we're working with a project and they are driving us nuts. If we can do that, imagine how impactful not only the corporate culture is, but the worldwide culture is, because we're bringing our hearts to work. And that's not just buzzwords. We're bringing compassion. And compassion is activated when we acknowledge that somebody's in pain. It's more than empathy. Empathy is a buzzword. Compassion is what we want to go for.
I hear you. It's one of my top values. So in all the work you're doing, what are the top concerns that companies have today that might have been around for 20 years, but are really so in their face and perhaps affecting the overall company culture and wellness? There's something that needs to be done. What are some of those? We've probably tapped into some, but any specifics? And what have you done in some of your work, without naming who you've worked with, that have helped with those particular issues? I know resiliency, huge buzzword, and I'm sure that's very relevant today. Can you just take us down that a little bit, and anything else that you'd like to add?
Sure. So, you know, just quickly, what are some of the challenges organizations are facing? Once again, we'll use the word polarity, because there seems to be these chasms between earlier career, you know, we can put a label on gen this, gen that, and later in career, and the values and the cultures and the expectations, and all of those are lenses. And so we do see that. We also see, because of the pandemic, blurring the worlds between this is my workplace and this is where I live, that there are differences in an organization's way of wanting people to work. And what does that mean? And can we truly create hybrid? It's still a work in progress. There's not clean results that say, yes, this is the way to go, or no, it's not. So that's definitely a work in progress. But on the individual level, which is where all change happens from the inside out. So we really love to work with helping create a greater sense of self-awareness. So we do these blended learning journeys, which are these delicious, longer-term experiences for employees. We'll have a cohort where there might be 12 or more. Right now, we have a cohort that's worldwide. It's 100 people. That's unusual, though. Ideally, we have these smaller cohorts, and each individual goes through receiving results from an assessment of some sort. So it shows them, here's the perception of you. And you don't have to agree with the perception, but it's good for you to know it's there. And now what do we want to do about that? So it begins with self-awareness. And then self-awareness without self-regulation is just obnoxious. Well, you know, that's just who I am. So we then say, well, what do you want to do about that? What do you want to work on? So each person has a coach that's helping them with their own individual journey. Then they come together as a group. And we introduce topics like, what does resilience really mean? And you have it, by the way. We all do, because we've been through hard things and we're still here. So how do we tap into that and trust it? How do we self-regulate and bring wellness at the level and in the way that means the most to me? So I am most productive because I'm not scaring the heck out of myself. I'm thinking thoughts that are nourishing rather than annihilating. And then we look at how to have these conversations with people you work with, because that's what gets everybody in trouble. They don't know how to do that, how to have this interpersonal excellence that creates the safety. And then a whole bunch of things about working better, including strategy and productivity and time management and things of that nature. But we bring those together in learning days, and now we create a hub for the smaller cohorts to get together and feel supported. And we include in their homework that they have to do an hour a week just for themselves. Meaning it's not like, oh, I should hang out with my child because mommy's been gone a lot. It's no, I want to watercolor this week because I wanted to watercolor when I was 21 and I haven't touched them since. So it's just supporting each other through accountability and also problem solving together. And then we lather, rinse, repeat. We do that maybe for 6 months or a year. And it's absolutely transformational. So beginning with that little pebble in the pond and letting it cascade out, and it really, really shapes culture.
I wish every company would do that, you know, and it's like, this is going to make all of those individuals better humans. You have to, as I always say, you have to take care of you first. Like, you're the only one responsible for yourself at the end of the day. And that's both physically, that's mentally, that's socially, that's emotionally, psychologically. And then the professional part of you is, I don't want to say it's the in part, but like all those other things really need to be in balance to be the best employee or self-employee or whatever it might be. Then it's like a big renewable cycle. But if you don't have these key ingredients for this individual health, I think that's what has probably been missing a lot in the corporate world in decades past. And I think it is important to recognize, like, if we help people feel safe, safe with being able to express themselves, safe in being their own individual person and having their own individual opinions, safe in their bodies, safe in their nervous system, which helps them regulate, they're going to be a valued member of this ecosystem.
So, so true, Laura. And think about when you fall in love. So it's because we have that safety. I can show up and be having a bad day and know that I'll get a hug from you. I can hold you up when your knees are wobbly. And so these are human needs. And the biggest way to find the masses of humanity is in the corporate world. That's where we spend all of our time. So it makes so much sense to address these needs there. And really, I mean, we don't come out and say this, but we're focused on creating safety, which is a form of love.
I love that. And I love you. Can you just tell everybody how they can find out more about you and the services you offer? Because we will have people in the corporate world listening.
I'd love to hear from people. On LinkedIn, I show up as Jill Stevens Miller, and I'm a partner in a company called True Work Inc. And our motto is people are the heart of your brand. And everything we do is focused on what I've described today. Yeah, I'd love to hear from people. Go to our website. You can LinkedIn Connect. Send me a message so I'll know that you're responding to the podcast and that you're not an ad. And, you know, I always like to take time to give back. I do a ton of pro bono because there are smaller companies that can't do some of what we're doing for these massive global organizations, but I care deeply. And together we can, as corny as it sounds, together we can make a difference. We're not just here for a paycheck.
Amen. That's our sign up. We're not just here for a paycheck. I love that. We're here to spread love.
Yes.
And that's kind of, it's not as hokey as it sounds. It's as real as it sounds. And it's as necessary as it sounds, because when you feel loved, you feel safe and you feel more inspired to give and to receive in the ways that are most healthy and supporting our overall wellness. So thank you for your time, your expertise, and your just genius, but also just biggest heart of anyone I know.
Oh, thank you, Laura. Well, right back at you, sincerely. It's been a pleasure. And I hope that somebody found something today that will make their day-to-day work experience a little bit easier.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Redefining Movement. If you like what you've heard, please like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Feel free to leave us a rating and review or share with someone you know. Check us out at www.litmethod.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.